Hello and welcome to Clappercast, a weekly discussion of all things cinema. I'm your host, Rory Marsh, and today I'm happy to be joined by Kyle Craigbaum.
Hello.
And Carson Timar.
Hello, hello.
For this special episode, we're going to look at the films coming our way in 2021. First of all, we thought we'd start this preview discussing some of the heavy hitters due to grace our screens next year. With numerous films delayed from 2020, 2021 is going to be jam-packed with the latest projects from some of the most exciting talent the industry has to offer. I wanted to kick off this preview with a film that I think we've talked about a few times on this podcast, and I'm sure the conversation is not over on it, but I'm really excited for it, so I'd like to hear what you guys think about this, and that's Denis Villeneuve's Dune. Carson, let's start with you on this. What do you think?
This is such a weird film to talk about because, like, it's so conflicting on paper because every talent involved is incredible. Like, some of the best talent currently working in the film industry who, like, don't make mistakes. They just produce good stuff from the acting, obviously the director. Like, this is just seemingly on paper a really good movie. But then you have the source material, which is impossible. I read it in preparation for the film this December. Hey, that didn't turn out well. Got to wait 10 more months now. But it is so impossible. This is a film that both seems like it can't be bad, but it also seems like it can't be good. I'm just at this point, not even like anticipating it because I think it's going to be great. I want to see if this is good or bad. I am so genuinely curious and unsure, and just I don't know what this is going to be, but I'm just excited. I'm sad because it's never going to have the part two. I know they want to make two parts for this story. This is only the first part. It's never going to be completed, even if it's the best film ever made. So that's tragic already, but I just want to see this film. Like, more than any other ones on this list, I just want to see Dune, and I'm not going to see it for 10 more months, and that is sad.
God damn, I am excited for this film. Denis Villeneuve is my favorite director currently working. If there's anyone that can adapt an unadaptable book, I think it's Denis. I have purposely not read the book because I don't want to put that worry in my head, that fear that he won't be able to successfully adapt it. I think that whole crew is going to make it one of the must-see blockbusters of next year. And I think that Denis, if anyone can make it work, it's Denis. That cast is one of the most stacked in recent memory. The trailer was exciting. It was visually stunning. I think it's going to be an experience.
Yeah, I mean, Denis Villeneuve, if there's one person who knows how to do hard sci-fi, then I think it's Denis Villeneuve. Sadly, Stanley Kubrick is no longer with us, so he's the next best option, I think. He's shown Blade Runner 2049 that he can make a sequel to a film that no one knew they wanted or needed a sequel for, but I think he pretty much proved to all of us that we did need it. And Arrival is one of the most mind-bending, fascinating sci-fi films I've seen in a long time, deciding to take a really interesting approach to the kind of alien invasion subgenre. So I'm really excited for this. I'm really, really, I mean, I don't really have a doubt in my mind that it will be bad necessarily. Obviously, Carson, you've read the book. I walk past the book in the bookshop all the time, and it just intimidates me too much to even try and open. So I'm not going to worry about that. But also, I tell people it's because I don't want to know what happens in the story and save myself the film. But that's why I don't think I'm quite ready for that book yet.
I hope this is better than the last time I read a book for a movie, which was The Goldfinch. Every year, apparently, I just pick one big book to read for a movie, and that was a disaster. So I'm just hoping this is worth more than that was.
No sandworms in The Goldfinch, are there? I'm pretty sure, right?
No. Yeah. Not in there.
Yeah, I mean, it just looks utterly brilliant, which is what we've come to expect from Denis Villeneuve. I mean, even sequels the man's not connected to, like Sicario 2 was a great sequel to a film that we didn't think needed a sequel. Not that it has anything to do with Denis, but, you know. I don't know. It just looks astounding. The sequel looks... Not the sequel, what am I talking about? Dune looks brilliant. I think even like the sound design in the trailer and the visuals and the cast, I have no doubt will just boss it because they're amazing in everything they do. I sound like a huge fanboy for this film here already, and it's not even out. but I just don't see how this can go wrong. Maybe I'm wrong and we have another like Heaven's Gate or David Lynch's Dune on our hands here, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed that they've got, I don't know, I feel like this is, the people in Hollywood took a look at Dune and said, people say this is unfilmable. So what we're going to do is going to pour all the money into this film and do it right, so that even if we never see another Dune story ever again, we knew that we tried our hardest to make the best possible version of this story that we can. And I really respect that. It's a huge swing. I hope it's not a miss, but in my heart of hearts, I know that financially this might not do great, but I'm trying not to think about that now. I'm just very, very excited to see this on the big screen.
Those are some famous last words before disaster. I don't see how it could go wrong. Also remember, it's coming out on HBO Max. So I don't really know if the box office is going to matter that much, if it is still going to HBO Max, which I know there's a rumor it will be pushed back. So it's not part of that deal, but considering it's like the main selling point in the deal, that would just be weird. But I mean, hey, if there's one thing to help the box office, if it is lower, you know, it is the fact that it will not just be in theaters. So that's at least a positive question mark.
Yeah, I'm so with Rory on this one. Just from the trailer to the movie, it looks so up Denis' alley, because one of the best things about him as a director is his use of scale. No other director in recent memory can fully tackle an epic scale like him, as far as visually the scale. Blade Runner 2049 is huge and massive and grand. And Arrival has moments of that too, where he knows what he's doing. He knows how to work with a lot.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that, Carl. My only reservation, I would say, after just fanboying over Denis Villeneuve for 5 minutes, is he can tackle epic scale, but I don't think he's ever tackled an epic story of as grand proportions that I think Dune is, with all these, you know, spread out plot lines and characters spread all over the place and lots of lore that you have to stuff into I'm assuming this will be 3 hours. It can't possibly be less than that. But I'm just slightly concerned to see how he'll tackle something of this narrative scale. It's like something that Peter Jackson might do quite well at taking on. But I think Denis, in my heart of hearts, I think Denis is the right filmmaker for this. I remember reading an interview with him in Empire or Total Film or something, saying that he was asked if he could do any story, what would he do? And he chose Dune. So I feel like this is in the safest hands that we can find in Hollywood at the moment. I'm just hoping that he pulls it off. But I don't think anyone's going to this actively hoping that he doesn't. So that's kind of a dumb thing to say, but whatever. Yeah, that's my take on this movie.
I mean, I definitely think if this is bad, we just need to put Dune down and say it's not happening. Like, David Lynch and Denis Villeneuve, if they can't do it, no one can. Like, it's just not happening if it doesn't happen here. So hopefully it does, but we will see.
Okay, should we talk the French Dispatch here? So Wes Anderson's movie, it was meant to come out this year, I believe. It was meant to at least premiere at Cannes, I think, which sadly never happened, which was a real shame, because if it had, it might be in our hands right now, but alas, that's not the case. This kind of looks like a film of Grand Budapest Hotel proportions. I feel like he scaled it back with Isle of Dogs a bit, you know, which was obviously for the best. Isle of Dogs is a great movie, I'm not going to deny that. But this feels like the kind of historical grand scale feature that he made with Grand Budapest, which I think to this date might be objectively his best film. It's hard to say that, because obviously everyone has their own opinions, but I think in general that's his most accessible and kind of widely acclaimed work. There's never really much to say about Wes Anderson, not due to the fact that he's, you know, a bad filmmaker. I think he's one of the most valuable filmmakers we have working today. There's not much to say about the man, because if you go into a Wes Anderson film, you're going to be just completely satisfied when you come out. The man hasn't let any of his fans down yet, I don't think. And obviously I'm speaking, you know, very overtly here. I'm sure there are some people who have their qualms with him. But if you go into a Wes Anderson film expecting to get a Wes Anderson story delivered in the way it usually is, in the way we love to see it, then you're not going to be disappointed. And from the trailer and from the cast attached, I don't think this is going to be anything different. It's just going to be another great, interesting, quirky, historical Wes Anderson movie.
I totally agree. I'm not the most versed in Wes Anderson's works, but after the trailer for this one released a few months ago, I watched Grand Budapest Hotel, and it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And this has a very similar vibe from the trailers. I agree, it does feel scaled back after something like Isle of Dogs, which brought it literally the scale way down. I talked about the cast of Dune. The cast of this film is fantastic. Wes Anderson never has a problem with his cast. They're always flawless for what he is going for. This just looks like another hit from him.
Yeah, I can't really argue with anything you've said. I think with looking at Wes Anderson's career, there's a very clear line. There's before Fantastic Mr. Fox and after Fantastic Mr. Fox. He's always cared about aesthetic, but since Fantastic Mr. Fox, he's really dedicated himself to building these, you know, very immersive, very stylistic worlds from the ground up after his, you know, stint in animation. He's a director who very rarely misses, so I'm excited to see this film. I think it looks really good. The one thing I'm a little bit worried about is he's proven in the past that his weaker films are where he tries to do just a bit too much with too many characters. He works best when he's more focused on one story. This is apparently a big film with multiple plot lines going on, so we will see there. But I'm really not worried. I think this is probably going to be a great film. Even if it's not top tier Wes Anderson, it's probably still going to be pretty good. So I have very little reason to worry. I think, yeah, I mean, just echoing what you've said, I love Wes Anderson. It looks good. The cast is great. So, I mean, why would it be bad, I guess, is the question.
It's interesting talking about this right after Dune. I think you've got one of the most dangerous films we've seen in the industry, maybe in the last 10 years, compared with, you know, a film made by one of the safest hands in the industry right now. When you commission Wes Anderson to make a film, you know exactly what you're getting. And thank God they keep commissioning to make these movies because they're just so great. I think we'll move on now to... So this is maybe the terrible child of 2020 cinema. No Time to Die has literally maybe had the most tumultuous release schedule of any film this year. I'm pretty sure the whole industry has been in serious turmoil about their release dates and what's coming out and what's being shelved. But this seems like at every single possible angle, it's been trying to come out and find a window where it can release and find a big audience to recoup a budget that seems mind-boggling. But No Time to Die has just had such a struggle coming to our screens, and hopefully it's coming in 2021. But then again, time will tell. As Carson was saying before we recorded, we wonder how many of these films we'll be talking about in the 2022 preview, but we'll see. Are you guys looking forward to No Time to Die? I mean, it seems like a bit of a dumb question. It's James Bond, right? But let's see what you have to say.
I am looking forward to it more than I thought. Before the trailers were released, I can't say my expectations were too high because I wasn't a huge fan of Spectre. I thought they kind of went off the rails with the Daniel Craig era with that film. It felt so robotic with the way things were attempted. But with this one, as soon as the trailer was released, I started getting hyped again because it looks really good. It looks like a good conclusion to the Daniel Craig era of the series. It looks like it has a massive scale, but with a more compelling story than what was found in Spectre. And hopefully it's going to be another Skyfall or Casino Royale.
Yeah, I mean, everything after the first 10 minutes in Spectre is a near disaster, but still, I'm really looking forward to No Time to Die. I do think this is a film that has a lot of weight on its shoulders. It has a very interesting director. It is obviously wrapping up the Daniel Craig story, at least it is believed to be. It is apparently going to be this long, just big James Bond film, you know, possibly one of the biggest James Bond films to like come out ever as far as what it really means to the overall series. I'm hopeful for it though. Bond has always worked best in those more intimate kind of focused stories. Casino Royale and Skyfall obviously are two recent examples. It seems like that is kind of the direction this is taking. So I am hoping this is good. Bond is always kind of, you know, rolling the dice. Some are really good, but then you just have random ones that are really terrible. So, I mean, I would say out of the three we've talked about so far, I think, well, maybe other than Dune. So I guess the point I'm making is just completely not void and just not true. But I think this is the one where, like, it has potential to go bad, be really bad, has the potential to be really good. I just don't have a reason to believe fully it's going to go in either direction. It is a toss up. I am hopeful, but I wouldn't like put money down that this is going to be the grand film that it's meant to be, especially with an added year of hype. I think that's one thing, especially these films that have been pushed back from 2020. And if they continue to get delayed, the hype is just growing for this film, right? Like, we've talked about this film for over a year at this point, since it was like almost a year since it was originally supposed to be released. Eventually, it's not going to be able to deliver to the hype and that anticipation. I'm worried we're getting to that point, but we will see. I'm hoping not, though. I'm hoping it's really good.
Yeah, for a long time, I was pretty convinced that this movie was cursed. And I don't really believe in cursed films much, but from losing Danny Boyle as the director, to sets burning down, to multiple release date changes, to all the controversy surrounding a female 007, it seems like this has had a real rough time. Something I like to do, and this isn't really in line with the preview here, but, and we can cut this out if we need to, but if you were to have someone of your choosing to direct the next James Bond film, who would you have? I love thinking in hypotheticals here, but I've just been thinking about, I think Rian Johnson would do a great job. I think he's a very unique voice who's not afraid to take risks in these big franchises, and I think that's something that James Bond needs. I think the boldest James Bond films normally tend to be the ones that are the most beloved. I think Casino Royale's returns like a gritty spy thriller was really good for the franchise. I think Skyfall's very scaled back personal take on this story and this lore was another great addition. So I think Rian Johnson could have a lot of fun playing with the lore and just kind of bending the franchise to how he wants it to be, rather than how the people who own this James Bond franchise tend to deal with it, which is so delicately and afraid to take risks. I think you need someone in there to kind of revolutionize it, especially after Daniel Craig's run ends. You need someone there just to wipe the slate clean and give this new Bond their own personality. What do you guys think?
I mean, I'm tempted to say someone like Matthew Vaughn, but Matthew Vaughn essentially already made a James Bond film with Kingsman. But someone like him in that very dynamic energy and visual style, if someone like him directed a James Bond, it would not be like this this new dark Daniel Craig era. But after like five movies of this era, maybe we do need to go back to more of the goofy tongue-in-cheek, at least a little bit more, a little less of the self-serious Bond.
I don't know. I think at this point we've had what, like 24 or whatever. I think this is Bond 25. Don't quote me on that. We've had so many action films. I just would like a dynamic voice who's going to do something different. I know a lot of people would answer this question with Christopher Nolan. I do not agree with that statement. I don't know if I really want to see him do much more at this point. But like, I think someone like Lee Winnell after Upgrade would be really interesting. The guys who do John Wick would be interesting. I don't know. I just want someone who's going to do something different. I agree with you there, Rory. And I think Rian Johnson's a really like smart choice. And I'm sure there's better answers than this, but I just want someone who's going to do something different. Give us something more than just your basic action film. And I will, you know, be there for it. Just do something different, you know, take a risk, have fun with it. Granted, you have an established franchise, so, you know, you're not going to take too many risks with it and ruin, you know, potentially ruin the very marketable and very financially well-off franchise. But I just want someone to do something interesting with it at this point.
Yeah, I think those are both two good choices for potential directors. I think Matthew Vaughn and Lee Winnell. First of all, I think they have really interesting ways of shooting action, which is something I think the James Bond franchise does need. It does have generally stellar action sequences depending on the film you choose, but having a very individual, unique directorial voice handling those kind of sequences would be really interesting to see. But I think, yeah, you guys are right. We just need somewhere to come in there and refresh it all and start from year zero and just go, we need the Batman for James Bond. Grumps, I haven't seen the Batman yet, so don't quote me on that in 2 years' time when that comes out and it sucks. But, you know, let's try and be optimistic here. Let's move on to the next spy franchise, which is Mission Impossible 7. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I was never a Mission Impossible fan until Ghost Protocol came out. Brad Bird pretty much saved that film. I think it was a dying franchise before he came in and restarted it, which is what we need for James Bond, just to reassert the point there. And then Chris McCrory took over the reins with Rogue Nation and Fallout, which Fallout, I think, is maybe one of the best action movies of the last decade. That's quite a big claim, but I think I believe in that, yeah. I think he's got a real raw, visceral directorial hand, and he's very kind of restrained when he needs to be, and he understands when to prioritize character beats and moments and when to prioritize action sequences. And the fact that both are pretty spectacular rings true for his talent as a filmmaker and Tom Cruise's talent as, you know, the beating heart fueling this franchise. So I'm really looking forward to Mission Impossible 7. I'm not really sure what to expect. I'm starting to enjoy the fact that the narratives are starting to merge together more than they did in the original three films. For once, I think that the kind of Mission Impossible shared universe they've got going on here is quite nice, as opposed to what we were talking about beforehand in Wonder Woman stuff last episode. But yeah, I think Mission Impossible 7's another surefire hit. What do you guys think?
You know, it's interesting. I actually agree with you a lot with what you said about your history with Mission Impossible. Out of all the franchises, I mean, actually, I don't, if you've heard me talk about franchises, I don't care about franchises, but like Mission Impossible, I've especially just never cared about. I enjoy the films. Fallout, I agree, is one of the best action films of the decade. It was also just one of the best IMAX experiences I've probably ever had. But there's just something about Mission Impossible where like, I don't care about these films. I really enjoy them and they're good. But so I can't say like, oh, I'm super anticipating this one. I'm sure it's going to be a great action film. Like they've been really good up to this point. I see no reason why it would switch now. I do think eventually though, with Mission Impossible, you're going to have to, we mentioned this is a weird callback, but last episode, how you're going to have to, with CGI realistic animation, like you're going to have to evolve it somehow. And I don't know how you're going to evolve it. With Mission Impossible, I feel very similar. This is a franchise you're going to eventually have to evolve past just having these great action movies with like one huge set piece every movie. Like eventually you're going to have to find something deeper than that if you're going to continue into making sequel after sequel after sequel. But for the time being, I think it's, you know, really solid action. So I have full faith it's going to be really good, but I can't say like, oh, I'm super anticipating this one. I think also that we just don't know a lot about it. So that also helps. Right now it's just, oh, we're getting a Mission Impossible sequel. Once we get a trailer, if it's anything like the Fallout trailer, which is still one of my favorite trailers of all time, I'm sure I will be plenty anticipating it then.
I have to say I'm more hyped for this movie than you guys, because I would say that the Mission Impossible films are my favorite, you know, action franchise currently going. I have a very similar experience to that, where some people have to the Fast and the Furious films, where they just watch them every time they come out and just have a complete blast. Seeing Fallout in IMAX was one of my favorite theater experiences. And yeah, the movies never fail to entertain. I even enjoyed them before Brad Bird essentially revived the franchise. And yeah, I think with the way that Tom Cruise throws absolutely everything he has into the stunt work and the physical side of the film, I think it can't fail.
Just to reiterate, I think what you were saying there, Carson, I think it's interesting to see where this franchise will go. I think you're right in the sense that despite their pretty fantastic action movies, there's a sense of Tom Cruise and the crew continually trying to top themselves, as in every film features one headline stunt and the next film that has to be bested, which, don't get me wrong, I love seeing it, but I don't think that's a sustainable way of making films. I think it's going to be a real challenge, especially as Tom Cruise gets older and these stunts get deadlier and more intense and more thought out, to keep topping themselves. And I think they've slightly set a precedent that is what happens in each film. And don't get me wrong, Mission Impossible 6 is full of them, and it completely trumps Rogue Nation everywhere. I mean, you've got that helo jump out the plane, you've got the helicopter sequence at the end, you've got the bathroom fight sequence, and it's all beautifully done. But I think there is a certain, you're capping your franchise's lifespan by adopting that way of going about making your films. Okay, so let's move on to Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese's new Apple TV Plus movie. I don't really have much to say about this one. It's Scorsese. I feel like this is what we've been saying throughout this preview so far. We just say it's the director, and then we all kind of know we're going to enjoy it. It seems like an interesting story for him to be tackling, this kind of pseudo-Western, it seems like. And obviously we've got Leo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro on board, so it should be interesting to see all those three together again. I mean, he's back in his comfort zone. He's with his best crew. He's making it for Apple TV, which is an interesting route to take. I feel like in this day and age, we can't really be surprised. He's moved on from Netflix now, which is, I don't know how kind of civil that departure was. It'd be interesting to see some behind the scenes for that. But as long as Martin Scorsese is being allowed to make whatever he wants to make with the cast he wants to make it with, then I'm happy to sit and watch it. I don't have too much anticipation going into this one, but I'm sure if we see anything about it, then I'll get a bit more excited.
Yeah, I feel mostly the same way. I don't really have a lot to say about it. In fact, before doing this preview, I hadn't even heard of the film. I just looked it up a few minutes ago. And yeah, Scorsese, Leo, and Robert De Niro. Yeah, it seems like him with that cast, it's going to be an award contender if it ends up being to the quality of something recent like Irishman. But yeah, we don't know much about it. No trailers, no photos even. So just have to keep my eye out.
Yeah, I kind of echo your guys' points. I know nothing of the story, but I mean, I love Scorsese. I love The Irishman. It was my favorite film of last year, or I guess 2 years ago at this point. That's weird to think about. Love The Irishman, so I'm hoping this is good. The one thing I'm curious about is the fact that it has such a gigantic budget. And the one thing I know from people who know the story is that they don't know why it has such a huge budget. There's nothing in it that seems like it's going to take that much money. So I'm curious how he's trying to spend Apple's money at this point. But I mean, it should be good. Like, it is Scorsese, good cast. I mean, anything Leo is in at this point is exciting. He's just such a good actor and he's pretty selective at this point. So I'm quite hopeful for it, but yeah, I mean, I know nothing about the film, so it's kind of hard to be like, oh, I'm hyped for this, and this. Like, it is these names on paper, and I think it says something that these names on paper have us like genuinely excited for this film. Like, you know the quality of those names at this point. So yeah, I'm excited for this one, but I know absolutely nothing about it.
So we're gonna move on now to a film that I'm not sure how you guys are gonna react to this. I am a pretty hardcore fan for the Kingsman franchise. I think Matthew Vaughn's one of the best action directors we have out there working today. I think the way he makes these super crude, goofy spy movies with just the most entertaining action sequences and brilliant characters that kind of gave a new meaning to Colin Firth's career and introduced us to Taron Egerton. I think he's just completely nailed it. Even The Golden Circle, which I know a lot of people didn't like, and there's definitely issues I have with that film, I still really enjoyed. I might be putting my critical kind of credentials on the line there, but that's how I feel about The Golden Circle. I think it's a generally pretty good expansion of the original. And now he's taking us back to World War One, I believe, in The Kingsman with Ralph Fiennes, about the origin of the organization Kingsman, I think. And judging by the trailer, we get Rasputin. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of other world leaders. We've got Charles Dance, we've got Reese Ifans as Rasputin, which I'm really looking forward to seeing. And it just looks like it's going to be another really fun, really entertaining, tongue-in-cheek, slightly goofy, but then again, really well-made and constructed action film from Matthew Vaughn in a franchise that I literally will happily admit I'll keep on watching until he stops making. So from a very happy Kingsman fan, I'd like to see what you guys think about this.
You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Kingsman franchise, even the first film. I think like both films are good. They're definitely watchable. I wouldn't say either left a huge impact. So the fact that we're getting away from like the established story and we're going into a prequel setting, it's interesting. I wouldn't say I'm necessarily looking forward to it as much. Like, it's definitely there. I'm sure it's going to be watchable. I don't think it's going to be anything special for me personally, at least. I will quickly just end my statement by saying the erasing of Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again in the context of Colin Firth's revival in recent years is quite disgusting and disrespectful. We all know that's the film that really brought him back. Other than that, The Kingsman, I'm sure it's going to be fine. I don't know. This is one that I can't say I'm really looking forward to, but I'm also not expecting a disaster, and I'm certainly not hoping for one. So it's a movie.
I'm a huge fan of the first Kingsman, less so the second one. And from the trailer of this one, it looks closer to the second one than the first one. I think it's going to be a totally watchable, totally fine, shove some popcorn in your mouth action movie, but I don't think it's going to be anything more than that.
I love this. I love getting different opinions on things. I'm so excited. This might be one of my most anticipated of the year. I love it. I love Matthew Vaughn's style. Carson, I am inherently sorry that I did not mention him. Here we go again in my Colin Firth revival segment. But, you know, I'm sure that film has its fans, and I'm sitting right in front of one here. So there we go. Kingsman, I'm very much looking forward to. Edgar Wright has got a new film coming out this year. I've been listening to a few interviews with him recently talking about it, and apparently it's kind of a Giallo-inspired time travel 1960s slash modern day horror film. I mean, that sounds pretty fascinating. I haven't really seen Edgar Wright play with something that out there in a while, and this is a guy who made zombie movies and robot attack movies and things like that, so I'm really interested to see where this goes narratively. I'm also super excited to see a film set in 1960s London. Anyone who knows me will know that I have some really weird kind of favoritisms when it comes to watching films, and films set in kind of old-timey London are really, really big favorites of mine. Like An American Werewolf in London, I think, is one of the greatest horror films ever made. And I think the fact that it's set in London in the 80s has a huge impact on that. But yeah, Edgar Wright, just an undeniably fan favorite director. He's another director who I don't think has really ever put a foot wrong in general. Some people might argue The World's End is one of his weakest films. I think it's the best of the Cornetto trilogy, but, you know, shoot me later. So yeah, I'm really excited for Last Night in Soho. I think it's got a really interesting premise. I'm really excited about the locale and the story, and I think it's something he hasn't tackled before. So I'm really looking forward to this one as well, I must say.
Yeah, this is definitely my most anticipated film of the year. Edgar Wright has never missed, and I agree with you, World's End, I think, is the best of the Cornetto trilogy. But he's never missed, and seeing him tackle a completely different genre and the cast that they have. I mean, I'm currently going through Doctor Who, so it's exciting to see Matt Smith in a lead role. He hasn't really been in the spotlight for a while, but Anya Taylor-Joy is one of my favorite actors currently working. I think she's phenomenal in everything she does. And Thomasin McKenzie, after success in like Jojo Rabbit, seeing her again, it's just a great cast, great premise, and Edgar Wright is branching out to something new, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, no, it's not like a broken record. I agree with most of the things you guys said. I think Edgar Wright is often overlooked when it comes to like the freshest directors currently working. I think everything he works on is really exciting, even if they're not all necessarily like masterpieces. They all have a unique voice to them. They all stand out when you look back at like the years that they were released in. I think the genre is exciting that he's changing it up. I think the cast looks great. I also must say him putting this on his list of every movie he watched in 2020 during quarantine is absolutely baller. That's like one of the coolest things I think I've ever seen anyone do. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one a lot. I think this is just an exciting project. Again, I think when you have something this strange, it could go wrong. But I mean, again, I have no reason to suspect it will. So, I mean, I'm really looking forward to this. This is probably one of my more anticipated of the year overall. I actually agree with that.
I think it's exciting to see Edgar Wright dabbling in straight up horror. I think this is a film purely designed to scare us rather than the comedy horrors that he made before. Although I will say that when I watched Shaun of the Dead when I was like 10 years old, I was pretty freaked out. So he's got the capability to scare me. Let's just see if he can do it again. Last Night in Soho looks great. Let's move quickly on to The Suicide Squad. We did talk about Wonder Woman 84 last episode, which I wasn't a fan of, but Suicide Squad is something I'm actually quite looking forward to. I think James Gunn in the director's chair is a great, great choice, even if DC did slightly steal him from Marvel in that sense. I believe this is going to be R-rated, so I'm liking that they're giving him kind of free reign over the characters he gets to use. And he's making this film the way he wants to make it. And he has said in, I think, the kind of behind the scenes trailer that they gave this for Comic-Con, he did say this is the best experience he's had working on the movie, which is a bit of a middle finger to Marvel, but I think that's really exciting to see more than anything else. He's a ballsy director and he's got a real style and a real sense of fun in him. He's a lot like Matthew Vaughn in a way, and I'm kind of really looking forward to this and seeing where it goes. I think it's going to be a super unpredictable, off-the-wall superhero movie that kind of exists in its own world, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how this is tackled.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is clearly a film they have a lot of faith in, considering they're already planning multiple spin-off series and movies and such. So, like, I think it looks really fun from everything I've seen. Obviously, he is a very fun director. I think he's been one of the brightest spots in Marvel. I will shout out Jakob here quickly. Me and him are kind of like Suicide Squad for the first Suicide Squad defenders. We don't hate that film. He loves it more than I do, to be very clear. But I mean, yeah, I think this looks fun. We talked last episode a lot about the direction of the DCEU. We talked about how it's going more probably charismatic and comedic, and that's probably a good thing. And it seems like this film is doing that. So I'm ready. I'm excited.
Yeah, I agree. I did not expect to be looking forward to this film because the first Suicide Squad is cheeks. But this one, I think studios have realized at this point that they should just give James Gunn control of whatever project that he's on, because it usually works out. He knows what he's doing, and he knows there's so many characters in the Suicide Squad. They've announced the cast, it's huge. But if anyone can balance such a huge cast and give them all something flavorful to do, I think it's James Gunn. He did a great job with that in the Guardians films. But yeah, I have more faith in this movie than I thought I would when it was announced.
Let's touch quickly on Fast and Furious 9. I might have slightly changed tone there. I'm not the biggest Fast and Furious fan. Over lockdown, me and my friends thought we'd marathon them and we only made it to number 5. That's not necessarily because I didn't enjoy them. I think the first one and the fourth one and Fast Five are some pretty great fun action movies, but I'm getting to the end of my rope here. I don't really know how much more of these I can stomach. Granted, they're huge cash cows and they do really well and people really enjoy them, which is great. But I don't really know how excited I am for this one, which is weird to say because I think that's the first time I've said about this whole list. I don't really have much to say about Fast and Furious. It reminds me a little bit of Mission Impossible's formula in the sense they keep trying to top themselves, but Mission Impossible has actual stunts in it. That's disingenuous to say. Fast and Furious has stunts in it, but Mission Impossible, I feel, is more daring with the way it approaches the stunt work, whereas Fast and Furious seems to rely on CGI a lot more, and it's a lot more fantastical in its representation. I mean, these are pretty much fantasy movies now. I may be a little burnt out because I thought Hobbs and Shaw was a pretty dire dumpster fire of a movie. I still love The Rock and Jason Statham, but that movie just did not work for me. But I'm interested to see what you guys think. Are you guys still with this franchise, or do you think it's about time we put a pin in it?
So before Hobbs and Shaw, I try to watch all these films similar to how you did, because I didn't see any of them up to that point. I made it to the second one. I like the first one, despise the second one. So my main experience with this franchise is at Universal Studios on like one of the tours. Like, you have a little section where you see one of the cars like drive. That's all I've seen of this franchise. I mean, that car was pretty cool. I know nothing else of the series. If The Rock is in this one, I mean, he's nice to look at. So like, I have that going for me, I guess. But other than that, no, can't say I'm really anticipating this one. Probably from all the ones on our list, this is the one with the biggest chance that I just won't see it. I'll try to marathon them beforehand. If I can't make it through them, I'll just skip this one. I really have no interest in Fast and Furious, to be honest.
Well, yeah, I have a very similar experience to both of you. When the eighth film was coming out, I believe, I tried to marathon all of them. I got to 5, so I watched 5 of them. And it's not that I didn't enjoy them. I actually thought Fast Five was great. I thought it did exactly what it needed to. But there's a such thing as too much. And I think that this franchise is too much. It feels almost like the people who enjoy it, I think it's very similar experience to like WWE wrestling. It's just big, manly men and women fighting and punching and explosions and, you know, all of that. And it has its fan base, and that's fine. They're fun movies to watch, but there's nothing about this one that screams you have to watch it. So it's not, I can't say I'm very anticipating it.
We talked about Soul on the last episode. Now we're going to talk about Luca, which is Pixar's next film. This is going to be a hard one to talk about again because I don't really know much about it. I can't really dig up too many plot details or anything like that. It looks like a kind of island set adventure, kind of along the lines of Moana, but a bit more modern. That's the kind of vibe I get from it. I love the way that Pixar kind of gives their storyboard artists the chance to direct. I think this may be a first-time feature from the director. So it's interesting that they're getting new voices in there, which is always refreshing to see. Obviously, we always look forward to a Pixar film. It's not a studio that I actively anticipate the films for, but when they come out and they predictably get all the buzz that they do, I'm always keen to check them out. Are you guys looking forward to this one?
Yeah, I'll say Luca is my number one most anticipated film of 2020 or 2021. I think this looks genuinely quite great. I will say they're automatically queer baiting everyone. They basically copy and pasted the basic plot synopsis of Call Me By Your Name. Set in Italy over the summer, two boys hanging out. They have a secret. Oh my God, no, they're not gay. From what I understand, it's going to be more basically like a ripoff of Ponyo, and I like Ponyo, so hey, that's good. Pixar had a great year with Onward and Soul. Their originals tend to work really well. I'm really looking forward to this one. I think the setting of Italy is really interesting. We talked about how they can expand their animation. I think the best way they can do that is with interesting world building. This is a rather new set and new location for them to explore in their animation. So I'm really hopeful for this one. I expect this one to be really good.
Yeah, again, I can't disagree with either of you. I'm looking forward to it simply for the fact that it's Pixar, and the promotional image that they released was pretty, but I know nothing about this film, so I will just have to wait and see a trailer or any sort of information down the line.
So we're moving into MCU territory right now, so I'm just going to tackle these three films in one little conversation. So we've got Eternals, Black Widow, and Shang-Chi all coming out, which are all part of Marvel's Phase 5. Are we in Phase 5 now or Phase 4? Who knows? I lose track. Anyway, so Black Widow was meant to be this year. We've had a trailer. Personally, I'm slightly burnt out of the MCU at this point, so I may not be too much help on this one. I think Avengers Endgame was a perfect ending for the whole franchise, but obviously it makes billions of dollars, so why would they ever stop? Interesting that Black Widow is getting a solo movie after, spoiler, she died in the last one. I'm not really sure how invested I am in a prequel of an admittedly beloved character who is no longer part of this kind of ever-growing franchise. It seems bizarre that they would do that, unless they're resurrecting her, which is something I'm not keen on either, because I feel like that just deletes your stakes for the entire universe. They've introduced time travel, and if she comes back to life, then you're just getting a bit silly now. But you know, this is a comic book movie, so what can I say? Eternal seems like an interesting movie. This kind of sideswiped me that they cast Angelina Jolie in an MCU movie. She's just seems like a bizarre move. I'm quite excited to see how that's going to turn out, though. And Kumail Nanjiani and people are in it as well, so I'm excited to see that. It seems like a kind of cosmic style approach to the universe, much like Guardians of the Galaxy was. So I'm always keen to see something set in that kind of separate world from the universe. And then we have Shang-Chi, which I know next to nothing about. I've heard it's going to use it's hard to describe. The fake villain from Iron Man 3 apparently is appearing as the real villain in this film, although it's not Ben Kingsley, it's the actual person he was imitating. Listener, if you haven't watched any Marvel films, then I'm really sorry, because that's going to make no sense, but that's what Shang-Chi seems to be about. And I like how they've gone with a kind of ethnically appropriate cast for this, which seems like a real nice, I can't believe I'm even saying that this is a good step forward, because it should be something that's been going on for forever now, but you know, here we are. But yeah, I'm excited for all of these. I'm not, you know, it's not one I'm gonna be queuing up to be seeing in the cinema first thing, but they're part of the MCU and they've kind of got me hooked in this point by contract, so I guess I've got to just watch them all until they stop making them. Otherwise, if I miss one, I'm going to be behind on everything. So they've kind of trapped me now. That might not be a hugely excited reaction from me there, but there we go. I'm trapped.
Yeah, I feel very similar. I'm a little burnt out on the MCU. I'm still sticking around for the Spider-Man films and the Guardians films, but everything else is kind of a mishmash. Black Widow looks like a B-tier MCU film. It looks like the same gray color palette and action and of like a Winter Soldier, but less compelling. The only thing I'm really looking forward to in Black Widow is Florence Pugh, who is one of my favorite actresses working today. Eternals, I know next to nothing about besides the scale of the cast and the fact that it is cosmic. Eternals, though, does continue the trend that the MCU does that really annoys me, in that they hire indie directors to direct them so that they can kind of micromanage and control them. So the movie isn't really theirs. It's a studio film. They've been doing that for years with the whole Peyton Reed, Edgar Wright situation on the first Ant-Man. And so I can't say I have too many expectations for Eternals. Shang-Chi is actually my most anticipated of the ones coming out next year. To see, hopefully, a different style of film. They've said it's going to be a kung fu martial arts film that just happens to be a superhero movie in MCU. And they released some test footage last week of a fight that the cast had choreographed. And it was impressive. It reminded me of The Raid. So hopefully it will be a compelling action film. And that's why it's my most anticipated of the three of them.
Yeah, quickly looking over the list of what we're talking about today, I realized Spider-Man 3, excuse me, isn't on that list, even though it has a 2021 release. So just touching there, I think that's going to be, we'll see. There's, you know, the cast, we get new casting news every day, so that it's intriguing. I'm not necessarily sold on it, but focusing on these three, I'm rather uninterested by the MCU. Shang-Chi, I like the director a lot behind that film, though I don't like kung fu movies. It's just not a genre that speaks to me. Those in westerns don't really work for me, so can't really say I'm looking forward to that one. Couldn't care less about Black Widow. She should have got that movie 10 years ago. I don't really get the purpose of doing it now, but whatever. Eternals is the one I'm easily most interested in, not even because the cast, which the cast is rather good. I know nothing about the source material, to be clear, so I have no clue who the Eternals are. But the fact that Chloe Zhao is directing is super intriguing to me, considering she has such a unique style, coming off Nomadland, which is my favorite film of 2020. I'm excited to see what she does in the Marvel space with a blockbuster. Not necessarily that I think the styles are going to clash that well. I think it actually could be quite a messy film. You know, she has such a strong direction with The Rider and Nomadland. But I'm just curious to see how that film turns out with her as a director. She is incredible, to be clear. I'm worried about Marvel trying to change it and Marvel make it bad. I think she will have a clear vision no matter when. Hopefully that shines through. So again, it's not even that I'm like looking forward, because I think it's going to be a great film. I'm just curious to see how it turns out with Chloe Zhao directing a MCU blockbuster.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that. I haven't seen Nomadland yet. Obviously, I've heard all the hype and I kind of just want to get my hands on it. But that may be a while until next year when I see that. Carl, it's interesting to hear your point about these indie directors getting kind of shunted by the studio. It's obviously lovely to see them get a bit more, you know, get a paycheck, get given a bigger budget, get more exposure to a vaster audience. But I can kind of see where you're coming from, that there are a lot of directors who are kind of conscripted into these Marvel movies, that all their essence of style or what makes them stand out amongst the indie circuit is kind of taken away from them. So they're only really credited at directing these movies with lip service. You don't actually know how much is going on behind the scenes. I could be wrong. They could have full control and just being put into quite a normal freeing environment, but I highly doubt that. You know, you get Taika Waititi making Thor Ragnarok, which had some essence of him. Maybe I just thought that because he voiced one of their characters. I mean, you never really know. But yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from. If I had to choose which one I was most looking forward to, I forgot to put Spider-Man 3 on this list. It would probably be that. I'm really interested to see where they go with that story, all the casting news and the narrative details, which are sparse, are out, and it's all kind of speculation at the moment, but it all sounds very interesting. Very interesting to see it follow into the Spider-Verse. I feel like that movie proved that the kind of plotline they might be going for in Spider-Man 3 works, so I'll be interested to see that in live action. And I'm always game to see Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield back in the fold. And Jamie Foxx back as Electro. It'd be interesting to see if he can do that part justice, because I feel like with the right director, I think it's the director from the first two Spider-Man movies as well, which were both pretty good, I think. I think they could do a pretty good job there. Black Widow, yeah, I'd love to see Florence Pugh. I'm really looking forward to seeing David Harbour. He looks like a really goofy character in that. I hope him and Rachel Weisz and Florence Pugh don't just turn out to be the villains like a lot of people are suspecting they will be. But even then, this route backs to my problem with Wonder Woman 84 of these disposable villains, and it's something Marvel has struggled with for years as well. I'm curious to see what this new phase of the MCU is going to do for the films, if there's going to be any real difference in this post-Endgame world. But I think maybe with the exception of Eternals, these all seem like B-tier Marvel movies. They just seem like sequels or offshoots that don't really have much to contribute to the overarching story, but just keep the franchise on people's minds and on the screens and keep the merchandise rolling in. I don't know, maybe I'm getting too cynical about these films, but that's my opinion on that.
I am worried about burnout, considering we have, and I'm sure some of these are going to move, but we have 4 Marvel movies, multiple Marvel TV shows, which really are like, what, like 6, let's say, hour-long movies. Like, it is, we're getting so much Marvel at such a rapid rate that already, I mean, we all, I think, are feeling burnout of Marvel. I don't know if just putting as much content as possibly can is a smart move. I mean, we'll see how it goes, but I'm very curious. I don't think Marvel's going to die. Marvel makes a shit ton of money. Everyone's like, oh, Marvel's ending soon. I definitely don't think that's the case. But I just don't see how this business strategy they're looking at as like, oh, that's the best way to combat this, when the main complaint is that people are feeling burned out from 2 movies a year. I don't know why you think 4 movies a year, 3 TV shows is the right move. But maybe that's just me. Maybe I guess, understand that.
All right, let's move on to Top Gun Maverick. I think we can put the MCU stuff to bed for now. We will see it next year 4 times, or 7 times, I suppose, with the TV shows included. So let's save all that conversation for 2021. We can leave that for a while. Top Gun is not a film I'm a huge fan of. I've got a great friend who says it's his favorite movie, and he got us all to watch it at university the other day. And I hope he doesn't listen to this. None of us enjoyed it very much. I think it's a really interesting kind of time capsule movie. Although I wrote in my review for it that my main issue with Top Gun is that the actual fighter pilot sequences aren't fun or interesting or intense or thrilling or whatever an action sequence should be, which in a film about fighter pilots might be an issue. I don't know. Top Gun Maverick I'm slightly more excited for because, and this is purely because of the director, Joseph Kosinski. Anyone who's listened to me talk on this podcast before might remember that I'm a big fan of Tron Legacy. And I've seen Oblivion about 3 times. I couldn't tell you a single thing that happens in that movie except for the fact that it's really, really pretty. Joseph Kosinski has got an amazing visual style. I absolutely love his visual style. I think visually he's one of the most underrated directors working today. He gets conscripted into these big studio films and, you know, he flashes his stuff, but he doesn't really get the chance to make. I don't think he's yet had the chance or the script for a film that will generally get him on the map as this big director worth talking about. I think the trailer for Top Gun Maverick looks awesome. It has all the visual style of Kosinski that I really love. It looks very sharp and clean, and that's exactly what I come to his movies for. So I'm a lot more interested in this film than I have the right to be as someone who doesn't like the first one. But the fact that we've got this director behind the camera and Tom Cruise has evolved so much as a performer, I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes. I mean, there's no way they're going to make a film that's tonally similar to the original. So this is going to be a completely new thing in my eyes. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it shapes up.
I'm a fan of the first film for a couple of reasons. I'm a fan because number one, it takes place in San Diego where I live. So like, I know where like stuff is. There's a bunch of places where it's like Top Gun filmed here. So like, that's cool. I also like it for the fact that Tom Cruise was shirtless on a beach playing volleyball. That was a great scene. Other than that, I don't really enjoy the film either. I mean, it's just something I didn't grow up with. I don't feel any nostalgia for. So I can't really say I care too much about the sequel. Tom Cruise is old. I don't think I want to see him shirtless at this point on a beach playing volleyball. So that doesn't bode well for me. I agree the director is good. The visuals look stunning from what I've seen. I know they really push the fact that there were no visual effects. These are all like practical shots and they look brilliant. So, I mean, I'm hopeful for the film, actually. I do think it's going to be good. But yeah, I don't really care about this as a sequel, mainly because I don't care about the first film. But hey, maybe this can surpass the first film and be something really incredible. I mean, we'll see whenever it actually flies into theaters.
Yeah, I've never even seen the first film. I've just never had an interest in it. And I agree that this one looks good. The trailer was very appealing, very clean, very sharp. And I think it is going to be a good, compelling action film. It's not one that I am super looking forward to, other than the cast, where we have like people like John Hamm and Ed Harris and Miles Teller, who I haven't seen in a while. So there are some reasons for me to go out and watch it. It's not my most anticipated by any means.
Candyman is a movie that we were meant to get this year as well. Sadly, it's been delayed. I'm not a huge horror guy, and I know the original Candyman at least has a huge following as one of these kind of quite revolutionary horror films. And I'm really looking forward to this one. I'm not going to lie to you. The trailer itself sold me on this. The visuals look pretty spooky and unique, and it seems like a unique setting. Granted, it is a remake, but I feel like a franchise like Candyman is probably justified a remake by now. And Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, I will watch anything. I think he's one of the best actors we have working today. So I'm looking forward to this one more than I thought I would.
I honestly don't know how I feel about this film. From the trailer, I think it could go either way. I think it could either be a really great, really subversive horror film in the vein of a Jordan Peele film like Us or Get Out, or it could be just another schlocky horror film. I do think that this right now is a good time to release this film because of the themes of it. I mean, the original Candyman is known for its very topical themes of racism and stuff like that, and it applies even more today. So it is a good film to remake for the times that we live in now. I just don't know if it will end up being a great film.
I haven't seen the original. I'm not a big horror fan, specifically jump scare horror. We'll talk about Saw here in a minute, which is a horror franchise I like. But I'm not a big jump scare horror guy. I haven't seen the trailer for this one, to be honest. I don't really watch trailers most of the time, so I really have nothing to say. Like, this is just one of those releases that's there. I do think it's kind of shitty in the marketing that they're pushing this as Jordan Peele's Candyman when he's not the director, and she, I think, deserves much more credit than she's getting. But overall, yeah, I mean, this is just, I don't have a lot to say here.
I think, this is another difficult one to talk about because, it's quite a muddled marketing campaign. You're right. I think Nia DaCosta is an interesting choice for director. I think she's pretty suitable moving from an indie film up to a slightly higher budget, kind of with a wider appeal, such as Candyman. It is produced by Monkey Paw, which is Jordan Peele's production company. The man is a huge voice in horror right now, so I can see why they market it as such, and it's still kind of a black story being told by black filmmakers, which is so kind of integral. I think there's no way this is a schlocky horror movie. I think this is going to be a really, really kind of upmarket, intellectually stimulating horror film that has just got a great team behind it, a great director at the head of it, a great cast. I think everyone involved in this is 100% devoted to making it the best possible thing, which in horror movie remakes is pretty rare. So I think this could be something quite special. So can we move on to West Side Story very quickly? I don't really have much to say about this. I tried to watch the original on a plane a few years ago and didn't get past the first 20 minutes. So I will push this out to you guys.
I feel horrible because I also haven't seen the original. I also sat down and watched 20 minutes of it, and then I was like, I'm not in the mood to dedicate myself to this long of a musical right now. I liked what I saw, and I like Spielberg, so, you know, I think that's going for this film. I don't have much connection to the story, though, so I can't really say I'm, like, super excited for it.
I have also not seen the original. I have also sat down to watch it several times and not made it very far. And I'm a musical guy. I really am. I love musicals. So there's a good chance this will be good. Spielberg has been mostly fine the last few years. He hasn't been his classic self, but he's still consistently good as a director. I'm interested in the fact that they are still releasing this and they haven't mentioned because of God, what is his name? The star that had the
Ansel Elgort.
Ansel Elgort. So I'm interested that they haven't mentioned anything about that. None of the creative team or anything.
Just to clarify to the listener, you are sitting down with three of the wisest minds on West Side Story, so you're welcome for that insight from us there. I'm a big musical guy too. I do like musicals. I couldn't really get through the first one, and I'm assuming the music's going to be the same, so I'm not really sure if this is going to be for me. All I will say is, musical-wise, can we please get a Barry Jenkins-directed Hamilton on the way? That'd be great. Thanks very much. Okay, so we've got two more to go. This is another one that I'm going to struggle with. The Matrix 4. Love Keanu Reeves. Don't like this franchise at all. Moving on. Who's next?
Feel bad that we're talking about this without Jack here, considering he's like the hugest Matrix fan I've talked to. First film, I mean, stellar. It's iconic. The other two I appreciate more than most people. I think it's good ideas, like decent execution. Gets a little bit lost here and there. I need to rewatch them. I remember like enjoying them, but yeah, the first film was clearly the best. I don't really know if we need a Matrix 4. Like, I think it just comes down to the story. I don't think I was clamoring, oh, I need another Matrix film, especially for them to just push it out on HBO Max. It's, you know, not how I envisioned the series coming back anyway, even if it was going to. So I'm indifferent until I see the script. It could be really good. It could be forgettable. It could be bad. Who knows?
Yeah, I've seen the first film several times. I love it. It's a great film. I think I've seen the other two. I can't remember a single goddamn thing about them. And I don't give a shit about The Matrix 4. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's a cash grab. And I'm excited because of Keanu, but not much else.
I completely forgot that Jack was a big fan of The Matrix. So I'm starting to realize that I might be fired for foul-mouthing it now, but you know. Moving on. Carson, you were pretty keen to talk about Spiral on this. I am not versed in Saw at all, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, so Saw I like for all the wrong reasons, basically, according to every other fan, which also Jack is a big Saw fan. I think the first few films are fucking horrendous. It's bad screenplay. It's like a cool idea with a bad screenplay and horrible editing, like genuinely some of the worst editing I've ever seen on film. Then the later films just get so stupid that it's like genuinely some of the most fun I've ever had watching movies. It's just complete and utter fan service in just like the dumbest ways, which I love. Spiral, I think, is really intriguing to me, considering it's going back, trying to supposedly, you know, from the trailers and stuff, it's taking not only just a separate story, which if you know Saw, they don't do separate stories. That all like nine films take place at like the same fucking week, which is why it gets so dumb, is like you have to have so many moving parts and it gets so convoluted. The fact that they're not only going into a separate story, but also taking a more serious tone, it seems, is really interesting. Saw has never been a franchise known for like quality, you know, especially in the later films. It really becomes just dumb graphic horror that's trying to give fan service. But I don't expect it to be good, to be very clear. I don't expect Spiral to be good. I'm just really curious where they're going with this series. I'm interested in this move, considering it seems so out of left field from what the core identity of Saw has been since like Saw 3. This is just like completely out of left field. And I'm really curious, are they trying to make a seriously like legitimately good Saw film? Or is that just in marketing to help it stand out and it's going to be shitty like all the others, but like in the best of ways? That's what I'm hoping for. But I'm really intrigued by this one.
Carson, I could not agree with you more. These movies are so dumb, and that is what is appealing about them. It has one of the most convoluted mythologies and timelines of anything ever, and every film just dug itself deeper in the hole, and it's so entertaining. I wasn't as entertained by Jigsaw because I felt like it backed off some of the ridiculousness. It kind of took itself more seriously, and for that, I don't think it worked as well. But I'm curious about this one. I'm curious about Chris Rock and how kind of passionate he seems about the franchise because he's also producing it. And I'm curious. I want them to just go back to the full ridiculousness of like Saw 5 through 7. And then I think it could be like a total guilty pleasure.
With the headline releases out of the way, we thought we'd pick a few movies coming our way that might be flying under your radar. Carson, let's start off with your top three that you're looking forward to in 2021.
Yes, first I'll just say this was an interesting practice considering so many indie films you don't really hear about before Sundance or before they debut at whatever film festival or whatever. But there is quite a few I'm excited for. The first one is just Judas and the Black Messiah. One of the best trailers I think I've ever seen was the first trailer for Judas and the Black Messiah, originally scheduled, I want to say, for August of last year. I just got the new release date of, I believe, February 12th. So that's exciting. This is a heavy Oscar contender. I know I'm thinking this has a legitimate shot for Best Picture. Lakeith Stanfield, I think, is genuinely one of like the best working actors. So I'm excited to see him. Shaka King as director. This is just, I mean, it looks absolutely stunning. And it's something to look forward to for the beginning part of the year. My other two are A24 films, not to, you know, be an A24 fanboy, but here we are. We got Mike Mills, Come On, Come On. I think 20th Century Women was genuinely stunning. That's a film, I don't know if it needs a reappraisal because I think everyone who saw it loved it. I think it just needs more attention. Like, I think that's a film that will find a life here in a couple of years and everyone will just pick on to like how great it is. I think it had potential to be like a Lady Bird level huge hit and it just never reached that level. So to see him working again, obviously, is exciting. And then my final one is After Yang. Again, this is just due to the director. Koganada made his debut with Columbus a couple of years ago, which was this intimate, stunning, just beautifully crafted feature. Some of the best visuals I've seen in a film in the past decade. This is a much different story. This takes place in a sci-fi world. It's just so exciting to see Koganada back in general, but also just doing something completely different. You know, these are interesting voices. All three of these films I picked are really interesting voices who I'm just excited to see what they do next. And just I'm excited to see a film made by them. They're not necessarily the big, you know, Robert Eggers, Ari Aster names that everyone talks about when you talk about up and coming new directors. But they're equally, if not more talented, they've proven so far. And I'm just excited to see their careers continue to grow.
It's interesting that you mentioned those, because if you hadn't chosen Come On, Come On and After Yang, I probably would have chosen them myself. Mike Mills is one of the most underrated directors working today. He's only made 3 films so far. I haven't seen his debut, which is called Thumbsucker, I believe. But Beginners is one of the most heart-wrenching dramas you will ever see, with an amazing performance from Ewan McGregor and Christopher Plummer. About a man coming out in his 70s, I believe, 70s or 80s, which is just an astounding piece of cinema. And 20th Century Woman definitely continues that vein with a very personal story for the director, I believe. I've read a few interviews with him about it, and I think it's very much inspired by his own upbringing, with some beautiful characters. Annette Bening is pretty transcendent in that movie, as is Greta Gerwig and Elle Fanning. It's a beautiful ensemble cast and a beautiful film, and just a very uniquely styled film. I think it's the most stylish of the films that he's made so far, and I hope to see that continue in Come On, Come On, which stars Joaquin Phoenix, so I'm always going to be excited for that. And After Yang, Koganada, Columbus was a 5-star film, as well as 20th Century Woman and Beginners, to be honest. I mean, the fact that we're getting films from these two directors who haven't worked in a while this year is very, very exciting. And if you haven't checked out Columbus, 20th Century Woman, or Beginners, definitely watch them all before you watch these, because you're really missing out. Kyle, let's move on to some of your most anticipated films this year.
Yeah. Taking a look at, you know, what's coming out next year, there's a lot of really great looking films, especially on the indie scene. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Malcolm and Marie, which I'm excited for purely because of how it was made. It was shot during the pandemic over the course of about 2 weeks, give or take, by Sam Levinson, who did Euphoria on HBO. He's a very creative filmmaker. He has a very unique style. And it stars only Zendaya and John David Washington, two of the most promising upcoming stars that we have, their careers are blossoming, and they are both fantastic actors. And I'm always curious to see a very stripped back indie film, very, very bottled like in one location with only two actors. So you have just the actors and the dialogue. And I'm very excited for this one. My second one is Nightmare Alley, which is the next film by Guillermo del Toro, slated for late next year. Guillermo del Toro is such a unique director, and to see him work on something like this, which is said to be a hard-boiled film noir, is such a different style for him, coming from something like The Shape of Water, which won him the Oscar a few years ago. To see him do something completely different, and the cast that he has for it, with Bradley Cooper and Cate Blanchett and Toni Collette, Rooney Mara, Willem Dafoe, like, I don't think that there are many ways that this could fail. And the last one that I'm going to talk about is The Tragedy of Macbeth, which is Joel Coen's take on the story of Macbeth. And just seeing Joel Coen, one of the best directors living, tackle Shakespeare, which is so out of his wheelhouse, and to get someone like Denzel Washington as the lead, I think it's going to be a fantastic film, and I think it's going to pop up at the awards festivals near the end of next year.
Yeah, I think those are some really good choices. Sam Levinson is a director who I'm a really big fan of, not only Euphoria, but also Assassination Nation, which he did a few years ago, which is a kind of exploitation / grindhouse film about data protection, which if you haven't seen, and that might sound a little weird, but check it out. It's a really good time. And Joel Coen's Macbeth, I'm really interested to see. I think Justin Kurzel did a really, really good job of adapting that a few years ago with Michael Fassbender. It's a very stunning film. So I'm interested to see if this is going to be like a revisionist take or a very source material focused interpretation, because we've already had that. So if they choose to do one that's devoted to the text, then it's going to be interesting to see how they differentiate themselves. But some great choices, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really excited for The Tragedy of Macbeth. You know, he seems really inspired with how he shot the film, the dialogue used in the film. You know, he's making a lot of really interesting choices. So I'm excited to see what happens there. Malcolm and Marie, I'm really looking forward to also. I know it's coming to Netflix, I believe, in February also. After Tenet, I'm just excited to see John David Washington actually have like a role where he can like, you know, act. It's going to be just great to see. Zendaya is always lovely. You know, it seems like a decent story. It's them after a film comes out, I believe, waiting for reviews, or it's like an award show or something. I know John David Washington's like a filmmaker waiting for something. It sounds cool. It seems really stylish. I believe it's all black and white, so I'm really looking forward to that. I think both are incredible actors, and I mean, it should be fantastic. And I've heard nothing but good things about Euphoria. Haven't seen it personally, just don't have the time right now, but you know, I've heard good things, so the feature film should be good from him.
Okay, so I guess I'll throw out my top three most anticipated for this year and see what you guys think of them, but I'll just rattle through them quickly now. My first one is The Souvenir Part 2, which is the sequel to Joanna Hogg's film, which is called The Souvenir, you know, funny enough. And I mean, The Souvenir is a very, very personal pseudo-autobiographical memoir of Joanna Hogg's life growing up as an amateur filmmaker in London in the 80s, as a child of privilege, who gets involved with quite a dangerous character played by Tom Burke, who you might have seen in Mank as Orson Welles, who was criminally underused. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant actor. It's a shame we don't see more of him these days. But yeah, The Souvenir, if you haven't seen it, is a very, very personal, beautiful film Very emotional. Definitely one worth checking out. It's a real slow burn, but that's very much Joanne Hawke's style. And this is a sequel. Robert Pattinson was meant to be attached. He is now no longer part of the film, which is very, very upsetting to see because he had to carry on filming The Batman. So that film better be good if we weren't going to get him in this. But yeah, I have nothing but praise for Joanna Hogg. And it's a very brave film to make. And the fact that we're getting a follow-up, I'm very, very excited for. My second one is Babylon, which I know next to nothing about. It is the new Damien Chazelle film, who we haven't seen since La La Land. And obviously we had all that palaver when there was the whole Moonlight, La La Land, Oscars debacle. And he kind of has gone into his shell and made this movie since. I don't know who's in the cast. I don't really know what it's about. I get the vibe that it's kind of old Hollywood. He's straying from his musical tendencies here. Although we did have First Man, so it'll be interesting to see what kind of approach he takes, especially since we had Mank this year. So getting Babylon next year about a similar era in Hollywood should be interesting. But I'm always interested to see what Damien Chazelle's up to. And the last one is The Green Knight, which we should have got this year. It's criminal we didn't. Another A24 film, because I'm a sucker for that company. And this is David Lowery, who, in my opinion, I feel like I've said in this podcast, I've named a director and said, is one of the greatest directors working today. But it's kind of true. We're very lucky to get the slate that we're getting in 2021. But David Lowery is one of my favorite directors. After Pete's Dragon, in which he actually took a story that Disney may have needed a remake for and made it a really heartfelt, fun family film that actually was a step above all of the Disney remakes we've had so far, I'm happy to say. We've also had A Ghost Story, which is one of the most devastating films I think I've ever seen, with Casey Affleck. And it's a really interesting interpretation, not only on the kind of supernatural ghost mythology, but also on the human experience as a whole and what we go through in our lives and kind of the absences of people and how that impacts, but also how much time can like degrade certain areas. And it's very hard to explain, but it essentially spans the kind of inception of humanity as a race up to like the mid 2000s, I think, when it finishes. But it's a very, very upsetting movie, and one that's just completely fantastic. And then he did The Old Man the Gun 2 years ago, I think, which was Robert Redford's swan song. And I don't think it could have been more beautiful. So I think that's definitely one of my most anticipated films of the last few years, The Green Knight. And it's a kind of colorblind take on this Arthurian legend. The trailer itself looks like completely off the wall, mythological, very moody, kind of maybe psychological drama. I don't really know what to expect with it. And that's why I'm so excited. David Lowery's just amazing, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, those are great picks. If you hadn't taken Babylon, that would have been one of my three. Damien Chazelle is one of my favorite filmmakers. Again, I've noticed we are saying that a lot, one of the best directors working today, but it's an amazing slate. Whiplash is my favorite film of all time, so I don't need to know anything about Babylon to know that it's one of my most anticipated of next year. And I'm also very excited for The Green Knight. I think it looks great, although I can't say I'm as big of a fan as David Lowery as you are. I found a ghost story to be pretty overrated, but that's a discussion for another time.
Yeah, I agree. These are three rather strong picks. The Souvenir is a film that I was mixed on, but I also don't really remember why. I definitely need to revisit that film because I remember it having a sense of poetry, but it was just really slow. And I think that is a film, like, if I watched it at the right time, I would absolutely adore it. I don't think I watched it at the right time, both in my life and just like in the day. I watched it like 10 a.m. in a theater and it was just weird. But you know, I do respect that film for her using her voice and kind of bringing that personal truth to life in a very authentic and honest way. And I'm, you know, I am definitely interested in the sequel. Yeah, Babylon would also be in my three. You know, it was definitely up there. I am a Damien Chazelle's stan, I think is a like decent enough term. I am one of those people who love La La Land. It was my favorite film of its year. I figured it was 2016. I think it was 2016. I like First Man. Whiplash is obviously great. I don't think he's a director who misses very often. He hasn't missed yet, actually. And of course, I'm excited for that, even though I agree, I don't know anything about it. You mentioned that old London is like one time period that really works for you. Old Hollywood is like a time period that really intrigues me in film that I love. So I'm excited if that is the direction he's going with it. And then as far as The Green Knight, I'm also really excited for this. Dev Patel has been just on like an upwards trajectory recently. So I'm excited to see him. David Lowery really impressed me with A Ghost Story. I think both Pete's Dragon and The Old Man and The Gun, I believe it was called, or With the Gun, I don't know what it was called. Both those films are good. I'm not quite as high on them as A Ghost Story, but I think they're both overall good. He's proven himself as a director. This seems like a really interesting rated R medieval mythology film. I don't really know much about it. I don't know the source material, but it looks unique. And if anyone's going to make unique work, I think David Lowery is quite a strong voice to make unique and weird work. So I am excited for all those films.
Yeah, you just reminded me that The Souvenir Part 2, if it's anything like the first one, will be another old London movie. So big up that. I'm very excited for that. Anyway, to round out Clappercast, we like to end on the crew's latest film recommendations. So guys, what have you been watching this week? Carl, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mentioned this on the last episode too. I have been very busy lately with finishing out my semester of school, so I haven't gotten a chance to watch a lot of new releases. I've been rewatching things with my roommates. And so last week I watched Annihilation, which I talked about, and Mad Max Fury Road, which is another one I rewatched. And I rewatched it because I recently got a new 4K TV and I wanted to show it off. And it's a stunning film. It's designed, the escalation of the action sequences is almost unparalleled. And it is by far one of the best action films of the last decade.
Yeah, great movie. And also we're getting a Furiosa prequel in 2023, I believe it was just announced. So that's something to look forward to. I think Anya Taylor-Joy is attached. So Carl, that should be up your street. Carson, what have you been watching?
So as I've mentioned for a couple of weeks now, I'm just in the time of trying to catch up with 2020 releases as we are, you know, at the end of the year. And I have a watch list of like 70 films. So I'm like, oh shit, I probably should start watching some of these before they are dead to me on January 1st. What I really enjoyed was The Boys in the Band. I believe is the title. I get titles confused, so I apologize. That's not the exact title on Netflix. I thought this was a rather strong look at the LGBT community of yesterday. I thought it was a very personable, very entertaining, very watchable film, but also quite emotional at times. This is one of the best things Jim Parsons has probably ever done. He has a gimmick that doesn't always connect with me, but the range and just pure like control he has over each scene really impressed me here. And this is just a film I had a blast watching. It moved me, it had me laughing, it had me crying, and it just really worked. And I think it's one of the more underrated Netflix titles this year, considering most of the ones that they're pushing and kind of are getting press about, I think are genuinely quite bad. I think this is one that's genuinely quite good and deserves more attention than it's getting.
Like you, Carson, as I said last episode, I've just been trying to finish up the 2020 binge. The one that maybe stood out to me the most I've seen recently, I was going to choose Another Round with Mads Mikkelsen, one of the best actors working today. That is a great movie. If you haven't seen it, if you want to watch Mads Mikkelsen do jazz ballet on a harbour, then go for it. It's great. But I'll just say, if Jude Law and Carrie Coon don't get Best Actor and Best Actress nominations for The Nest, then the Oscars are pretty much dead to me. And that's my piece on that. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode of Clappercast. Where can we find everyone on social media? Carson?
You can find me on Twitter at @BP_movie_reviews or on Letterboxd, just Carson Tamar.
And Kyle?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Kyle Craigbaum, KrieghBaum.
Lovely stuff. You can find all the latest releases of film and television reviewed at www.clapperltd.co.uk. And find our social links on Clapper at Facebook, Clapper Limited on Letterboxd, and at Clapper Limited on Twitter. Make sure to rate, subscribe, and follow us to be notified when the next episode's released every Wednesday. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week to discuss all things cinema.